Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione and Michael Algello. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, Russell.
Russ, I'm sitting in the parking lot of a Wendy's restaurant outside in downtown Syracuse after the Toronto Marlies and Syracuse Crunch game, so I'm doing wonderfully.
And I'm assuming the Crunch won?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, it could be worse. You could be at a rest stop on the thruway, so I guess that's better.
That is.
All right, so let's get rolling. I guess first we'll bring up the draft lottery and our thoughts of it. The and all I can tell you is the word is boobery, and the boobery going on in Philly on sports radio is crazy already. I won't say the station, but I was listening this morning before they had Hexy on, and they basically got everything mixed up. Like they said, Patrick was the sniper, and Hischier was the 200-foot guy. And look, Hischier's defense isn't bad, but he's not the 200-foot guy. They meant Patrick.
No.
And so for like 5 minutes, they completely missed that up. And then, of course, when they asked the panel, who do you want? And then they're like, sniper. And it's just, you know, and it's just, and I listened to another show the other day, and somebody called in to a guy who, you know, who goes to hockey games. I'll say that. And the guy who goes to hockey games said, well, one guy's a sniper and the other guy is a 200-foot guy. He said the same thing. And he goes, which one do you want? He didn't even say names. At least the other guy that I just talked about said names the day before. He didn't even say names. And I'm just like, so this is it. And both people said it's a two-person draft. Like it's a two-man draft. And I'm like, you know, I wish this city could get out of the mentality of that it's an NFL draft style draft. It's not. It has nothing to do with it.
No, I mean, I think it's a misnomer in terms of when they say a two-player draft, in that I do think that both Nolan Patrick and Nico Hischier are the best two players available in this draft, the ones that you can look at and say, you could see them being first line centers for NHL teams. They're not superstar. They're not superstar players. They are, you know, they're not generational talents, but they're both very talented players who, again, depending their situations and depending on how things will pan out, if in fact, again, New Jersey and Philadelphia do take them one and two, which I think that's the expectation right now, but we can't make a complete assumption on that. But to describe Nolan Patrick as a quote sniper. Yes, he's got a good shot. No question. It's heavy. It's pretty accurate. Yeah. But he's not. But you know, it's not like he's, you know, going to be sniping. He's not going to be like, you know, Alex Ovechkin or anybody like that in terms of sniping shots. And people kind of get that idea in their head. They're both pivots. They're both centers. Their first responsibility is to play two way. The big thing that people need to focus in on with regards to Patrick, beyond obviously everybody's worried about his injuries and everything, which I think is a bit overdone in terms of what the degrees of the injuries are. But Patrick has already got NHL size and just has to add a little bit more weight to his frame. Whereas Hischier, he's a solid 6'1". Granted, he's a buck 76.
I don't know if he's really 6'1". I stood next to him, and I think he's 6 foot. But
again, they're probably basing it on skates. But I mean, I don't think it's. I don't look at him and I go, oh goodness, you know, he's going to be drastically undersized for playing in the National Hockey League.
No.
I think he is going to be a guy who, again, for those who are paying attention, he makes plays at high speed, plays at the pace that he chooses to play at. If you watch him play, the most important thing he's able to do is able to make really good decisions with the puck in tight quarters along the boards against bigger guys and just kind of be a step ahead of everybody. And that to me is a talent that to me is what I think accelerates him above a lot of other players. And the fact that that's what makes it again, they got to use this phrase, two player race in quotations. I think there's some very good players. I think for the most part, the picks one through, I'd probably say when you get to about 13 or 14, I think those are guys that are, that are likely to be what NHL contributors. And then when you get past that, you start to have to really lean on your scouts. You really need to sort of, this is where scouts really, really, really make their, are going to make their money. It's not in drafts when the depth in the last 2 years has been tremendous. Certainly last year's draft was certainly hyped up a lot. Previous drafts to that too as well. This is not that kind of draft in terms of depth. But now this is the draft that gets you the players that you're going to need depth-wise in the system. And if you can hit on guys in this draft, this is where you know your scouting department really is worth its salt. So I think New Jersey and Philadelphia both have a chance of benefiting. I think those are going to be the two players to take. And again, it's going to come down to, in my mind, what New Jersey is going to prefer at the top pick. And Philadelphia, and for them, they already have two, as we've discussed before, two big centers in Pavel Zacha, who's already on their roster, and Michael McLeod. The question is whether or not Ray Shiro wants to diversify his center portfolio with a different kind of player, like a Hischier in this case. But my gut feeling is that we don't necessarily know that Zacha is going to be a one. We're not, as of right now, to me, he's projecting more into that two C, three C range, which means you have to have a top line center. And if you want a physical presence, Patrick is, I think, going to be able to provide that. He plays a heavy game versus Hischier plays just more of a, in my mind, a more of a Claude Giroux cerebral type of game where he's trying to be one step ahead of everybody.
The interesting thing was, like, the opportunity, and they clearly mixed up the scouting reports, but they, you know, when you don't have a producer who knows any better and you don't have anybody on a panel who knows any better, then
that's what happens. And the fact of the matter is, the first day they get to announce it, they literally spent about 38 seconds on it because, let's face it, the host is completely uncomfortable with talking about it because it's not it's not in his area of expertise. And anytime that happens, he does exactly what you expect him to do, which is, you know, poo-poo it and say, oh, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't. And that to me, I don't want to turn this into a sports radio railing session in Philadelphia.
No, but
that's the matter is.
Patrick is a teammate. Yeah. He was a teammate of Ivan Provorov. It's such an easy thing to know.
Yes.
And yet I hadn't two stations. Nobody mentioned it. I'm like, come on, guys.
Because they don't care. Because at the end of the day, they don't really care. In Philadelphia, it's all about the Philadelphia Eagles, and that's all they care about.
I think Mike
wants
to chime in.
Mike, I'm taking the time here.
No, it's okay. The saying, ignorance is bliss. Well, the Philadelphia, Buffalo, and a lot of radio stations out there are extremely blissful because they don't follow these things. They don't understand what the hell is going on. The oversimplicity that it's a two-person draft. Well, you know, some people thought that the 2014 draft was maybe five or six people. And, you know, David Pastrnak gets drafted in the 20s. He's one of the best forwards in the league. So it's ignorant to go into the mindset of, well, this is a two-person draft, and you get your cues from like mockhockeydraft.com or some crap like that. It's like, you know,
I mean,
totally
they try
study.
And boil it down in this city, Mike, and I think that's the problem, because here's the thing: what if, you know, Cody Glass or Gabe Vilardi goes into the combine and they do amazing interviews and they just wow the Flyers? Is it possible they could pick one of them second? Absolutely. Anything's possible.
Sure.
And that's why you don't call it a two-guy draft, because there's still a lot of time left.
Now, it's more of a simple choice for Philadelphia and for New Jersey. I mean, obviously, New Jersey's going to get whoever they want. Philadelphia, I mean, there's been some speculation out there, and it could just be noise from Ray Shiro that, you know, the Devils are considering Hischier one. And if that's the case, you know, great. I mean, if they like him better than they like Patrick, or they think he's more durable, then, you know, so much the better. But I mean, I'm intrigued by this draft going into the middle and late part of the first round. You know, from the Toronto perspective, I think there are six defensemen in this draft that that the Leafs, you know, I'm sure they have them ranked at certain levels on their draft board, but I think they're a sixth defenseman that could be really decent NHL defenseman with a team like Toronto that desperately needs to upgrade their blue line. I think this is an opportunity to get, you know, a Villamäki or a Cal Foote or somebody like that that could help them a couple of years down the road.
Yeah, no question. And I think that's a good way to handle it. So talking further, we see that St. Louis has come back and won this game. So, they're inching back into the series. I mean, Pekka Rinne had a good game, too. It wasn't really anything on him. This was just a game where St. Louis was really determined. And so now that series tightens up a little. We're going to have Ducks-Edmonton. Everything's tightening up a little except for the Pittsburgh series. And, like, this is the only series that's not tightening up. And actually, it may be getting worse because now Alex Ovechkin is on the third line with Wilson. And I forget who the other winger is on that line. I forget who it is. It's not you.
I do want to. I am kind of curious. I do want to see tomorrow if, in fact, that those lines hold.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I do want to see. It may be, you know, sometimes the coach sort of sending an obvious message to his captain, and he's Trotz has said it. I mean, their best players need to be better in this series. I mean, Holpe has not been Holpe in this series, and they need him to be. Certainly, Ovechkin has not been. And without those guys, those are the two guys with as much depth as the Washington Capitals purportedly have. You know, those guys are not on their games, it makes things extremely difficult for them, even with Crosby being out of the line, because again, Pittsburgh's got that mentality and mindset where this group has gone stretches without Sid in the past, and they know exactly what they need to do in order to lock things down in terms of
Kessel's talked about it. Like he's
and Kessel talked about it the other day. So again, that's the thing going into this that they had to be aware of, and if Washington sort of let up on that, that was their mistake, and they were able to pull it even. But then Washington, you know, Pittsburgh gets that one back, and it's just that mindset. And now it's going to be really interesting because I know how much we always talk about the Caps in the fact that they've blown 3-1 series leads. Interesting little tidbit: the second most number of blown 3-1 leads in the series is the team they're playing, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah,
so do I think they're going to blow the series at this point? No, but if they can get that fifth game, if they can pull it back, if they can just take, you know, stay within themselves, and Ovechkin can play the way he's capable of, and Holtby can play the way he's capable of, and the rest of the lineup goes, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they could potentially pull the series into a seventh game. They've got the horses, they've got the talent. They just need their best players, in my mind, to do what they need to do and be factors in this series.
I'm not expecting it, Mike, but how many shifts do you think Ovechkin is going to take on this faux third line?
Two or three, and then they'll move him back up. I mean, maybe it's a wake-up call. I think the line they're putting him with is Eller and Wilson.
That's
just replacing Burakovsky on the wing on that line. And, you know, that line has been pretty effective. I mean, that line was the best line for them in Game 3, so maybe Trotz is thinking that, you know, that energy is infectious and it'll get Ovechkin going. But the problem here is, right now, the Capitals are playing the same way that they played in the first round against the Maple Leafs. You know, Game 3 was just like Game 6 against Toronto, where Matthews scores the goal, and then all of a sudden the Caps wake from their slumber and dominate the remainder of the third period and overtime until they win the game on Johansson's goal. And then in the last game, they go down 2-0, that own goal by Orlov, the Gunsel shot off of Orlov's tape. And then all of a sudden Washington wakes up and just takes over the game. You know, they scored a couple goals, the Schmidt tying goal, and then they allow Pittsburgh to get to the power play and get the lead, and Pittsburgh never yields it. So that's the problem in this series. Washington continues to play spotty. inconsistent and not a full 60-minute game. Now, you can't play that kind of energy for 60 minutes, but you got to play it for more than five or six.
Yeah, no question. All right, so I guess if Ovechkin could be a third liner, Tanner Glass can be a top liner. And you know I'm joking when I say that. But, you know, that's the obvious thing that we're seeing now in these playoffs. It's like these coaches literally will do anything to get a spark. So we'll see. We'll see how much it sparks. We'll go away from the playoffs for a minute and talk about this Scott Darling signing 4 years, a little over $4 million a year.
Yeah.
So he gets over $16 million. He's not even started any real important games that I can remember in his career. And, you know, it is – look, I think I've interviewed the guy. I think he's got his head on straight. I think he is a good positional goalie, a lot like Cam Talbot. So I get why this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But at least Talbot really had a chance to show people that he could hold it down when Lundqvist was hurt that time. Darling's never had to have a long stretch like that. And
yeah.
So now we're looking at a guy that, for lack of a better way, and I'm sure Mike will groan at this and you might, it just seems like he's sort of like getting the Scott Mitchell treatment in for hockey.
Oh, man.
Rob Johnson. Rob Johnson's even better.
Yeah, Rob Johnson's good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I saw the deal. I mean, I think we all knew that Carolina wouldn't have made the deal if they didn't have a pretty good idea that they were going to have Darling locked down.
Right.
So now we're in a situation here, obviously, for them where they're going to expose Lack and they're going to expose Ward, and which of the two we'll see go. But again, getting back to Darling, $4.15 million AAV. For that kind of, with the goaltender who's, as you said, you've already laid it out, seems to have a pretty good head on his shoulders, but again, the track record's very limited. This to me, and again, I don't know in terms of, and I know the Hurricanes have a very prominent figure in the analytics community, in Eric Tulsky, and I'm very curious to hear if he had how much input he may have had with regards to this, because I know in that community, Darling has been, for lack of a better word, a darling. and there's been a lot of talk amongst them that they think this is a prescient signing by the Hurricanes, that he's on the verge of turning into, of being a legitimate NHL starter. But again, as you pointed out, again, if it's the Cam Talbot factor here, again, as you stated, Talbot had the opportunity for long stretches of play with Lundqvist being out, and Darling has not. So, to me, this is very much a dice roll. And you kind of brought up an interesting point as well, but I'm going to comment on it, and then I want to come back to it because I want to link it in, because there's been some discussion with regards to comparing it to Steve Mason's situation. But I'm going to let Mike go first here.
Okay.
Well, The thing is that, and I have a lot of respect for Ron Francis, and he hasn't done much wrong in Carolina, which gives me a little bit of pause for, you know, my opinion that I think this is lunacy. Because his record in Chicago, I mean, first of all, he's playing in front of a pretty good defense, sort of like Talbot did with the Rangers. But Talbot had that long stretch of a couple months where, you know, Lundqvist was out and he was the guy. And Darling hasn't had that kind of long stretch with Chicago. I know Crawford was injured for a while, but they're paying him, and this is the thing, they're paying him a salary that's commensurate with other teams who sign guys who they're not 100% sure are number one goalies, like Jonathan Bernier in Toronto was around $4 million. Talbot in Edmonton, James Reimer in Florida, they're all around $4 million. And the one thing they have in common is I don't think that for sure they're a 1A number one goaltender. I think they're more 1Bs. And if that's the case, spending $4 million on a 1B goaltender like Scott Darling is lunacy.
Yeah, and passing it back to you, Ann, I will say this.
Mm-hmm.
The Carolina crowd, there's an analytics crowd that's very down on their goaltending, Lack included. And so they're happy to see someone new. It looks like Cam Ward, when his career is done, whether it's getting bought out or not, is going to get some sort of position with the team. That's the word that's coming out, like, from wherever. And so I guess it'll be smooth in that regard. But then, yeah, I brought up Steve Mason because I figured if Darling is getting this, I think Mason on a short-term deal can get $5 million a year. I do.
Possible. But again, he has to, and I brought this point up before with Mason, he has to get to be able to garner a number one starter's job to justify the $5 million AAV. And I am not 100% sure yet that that job is out there for him. That's the thing. It's going to have to – I mean, we're going to see, I think, some fluidity and movement this offseason. The problem for Mason is the fact that he does have – you know, he's coming with baggage that Darling doesn't have. As much as, and I do think he's an NHL starter. I do. But comparatively speaking, if you're looking at his situation, he had a very up and down year. He's, you know, honestly, his best hockey that he's played in his career was when Jeff Reese was his goaltending coach. And then, you know, obviously Reese left the organization, and he's been a much more mercurial goalie in terms of his play being much more up and down in the most recent season. Now, again, whether or not there's outside things going on there or not that we don't know about, again, that's for us to speculate. But in reality, in this circumstance, for him, he did not pick a particularly good year to have an up and down year and have times during the season where he looked like he had difficulty stopping a beach ball, him or he or Michael Neuberth in this circumstance. That said, when he's on, we've all seen it. He can really take over a game and really, you know, and do a heck of a job. The big question again for a team is going to be, are you going to be willing to sink $5 million into him, knowing that's what's coming with him? And I'm not 100% convinced. He's at 4.1 right now on his expiring deal with Philadelphia. He's got to find a spot where he's going to be a lock. That the team's going to be willing to commit to him as the lockdown number one. And I'm just not there yet with looking at those teams. Could it be a Calgary? I don't know. I think Elliott certainly, I think, you know, pulled himself up during the season. And I think they're counting on him in this circumstance. But everywhere else that I'm kind of looking at right now, I have to see where he lands. I have to see really where the openings will be before I'm sort of willing to say that he'll corner that $5 million AAV.
Sure. And that's why I'm talking 2 years, and it could be last minute. It could be. It could be a team like Vancouver last minute. Like, hey, Demko's
when
not
you say
ready.
Last minute, when you say last minute, are we talking about like right before the, like going into training camp? Because at that point, I figured Mason's going to,
Well, it could be.
If he's going to get that slam dunk. If he's going to get a $5 million AAV, it's got to happen sooner than that.
Maybe.
That's a big number. That's a big number to commit to.
I mean, I could see Vancouver doing it. I mean, they're not going to have Miller. Who are they going to use?
I'll tell you right now who is popping champagne and smoking cigars, and that's Ben Bishop. Because if Scott Darling with no resume is worth $4 million, then he's worth $6
million. Right.
I mean,
he's getting $6 million. Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, that's obscene. I mean,
and
you know,
he's
like,
got a track record. And Mason, in this case, unlike Mason, Bishop has a track record. He's taken a he's taken a team to a Stanley Cup final.
The one thing Mason does have on his record, which is good, is that he has gone on really good streaks with the Flyers, and it really has carried them. And so, you know, again, I think Vancouver is going to be desperate for a goalie. I don't know who they're going to get, and they may end up paying that money.
It could be Mason. It could very well be Mason if they, in that circumstance. Vancouver is a place that I had sort of in the back of my head as a place where he could land.
Yeah.
And I also think that Darling, you know, in comparison, Darling's $4.15 million makes Marc-Andre Fleury making 5.75 look economical, because
The
guy won a Stanley Cup and he's playing wonderfully right now in these playoffs. He's clearly at about 32 years old. He's not over the hill. So if a team needs a goaltender, if a team like Dallas thinks they're a goaltender away from being a top contender in the West, then if I'm Jim Nill, I'm more than willing to trade for Marc-Andre Fleury when my option is to go out in the free agent market and spend $6 million on Ben Bishop, or, you know, try to set some sort of secondary goalie and pay him $4-4.5 million. You might as well go for the gusto and go for a guy who's won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, he may not be able to trade. Nobody may be able to trade for Fleury. He may not want to go anywhere. And then he might be trading for Matt Murray instead, which is fine. I think Dallas would take Matt Murray. Or Pittsburgh might be giving up a first round pick to Vegas to just casually not take Matt Murray when he's exposed and take somebody else. I mean, that's always a possibility too. So there's a lot of options here, and the goalie part of it will be interesting, because I kind of think that the Flyers signed Neuberth to the deal they signed him to, so Vegas would take him, because I think McPhee wants him, and I think that's a nice economical deal for them, and it just seemed like it was nicely set up there, and then Hextall doesn't have to worry about losing anybody else.
I think Vegas is going to be Washington West. You're going to see a lot of, you know, ex-capitals like Eric Fair and Brooks Like, and, you know, guys that McPhee drafted and know. I think they're going to end up in Vegas. I mean, obviously there are going to be other players as well, but I think he's going to rely on who he knows and who he's comfortable with to sort of start that franchise.
Yeah.
So here's a question for you, since we're talking about and being Washington West. Obviously, also the big news for for Vegas was the fact that they signed the KHL forward. I can't quite say his name.
Shipachev.
So, and of course, there's been talked about they're also in on Evgeny Dadonov.
Yep.
So it's also smelling like KHL West as well. So obviously, I'm going to ask the next question, since I don't think New Jersey necessarily still wants Ilya Kovalchuk at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Does Vegas get involved potentially there? They're going to go that route.
Only because I say no, only because Kovalchuk wants to only go to New York based on for his kids and such. So he's angling for the Rangers or Islanders. But again, my feeling is Ray Sherrill may just say, hey, you know, that's a nice thought, but if you don't want to play for me, which apparently he doesn't want to, he might just let that contract run out, make him sit out of here.
Yeah, but I think Sherrill is good. I mean, he has the possibility of getting an asset for somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah, but are you going to do it for the Islanders or the Rangers? That's a tough one. I don't know.
Right now, the Devils are 2 or 3 years away from, I think, being not a contender, but being a quality. I mean, right now they've got Taylor Hall and what else? You know, there's not much there. So.
And you need to also, at the end of the day, Russ, with all due respect to Ilya Kovalchuk, you know, you decided to leave. You cashed in going to the KHL. Now you want to come back in, and now you want to call your shot somewhere you want to go.
I don't think he deserves it either.
Very simple. But Ray Sheroes can tell him pretty much. You can sit your ass out and not play at all this year, or we'll give you, or else I can go make phone calls around the league to see if there's a spot elsewhere. Maybe it'll be a contender. Maybe you'll get lucky and actually have a chance of winning a cup this year. If New York is your focus so far, keep your mouth shut, which I know is tough for him to do.
Yep.
Keep your mouth shut, and I'll work a deal out for you. But it's not going to be to New York. It's not going to be to the New York franchises, and that's the way it's going to be. You're not going to call your shots. He's got to understand that. He's made his money. Mm-hmm. Now, if he wants to be back into the NHL, if he wants to be back in the game, and he wants to be playing potentially for a contender, you can't be that specific with regards to what your demand's going to be. That's ridiculous.
I agree, but this is right now the talk, and it doesn't shock me that this is the talk coming from Kovalchuk.
Well, he can pound sand, and he can sit and wait in limbo then. That's what I think about that.
He could.
Yeah, he can wait another year, and then that right of first refusal or that 30 team acknowledgement that they all have to say it's okay for him to go someplace else. That drops by the wayside after next year. But he's 33 or 34 now.
That's the thing. So, he's running out of time. He's running out of time for a team to really want him at this point. He's got to know that if he still wants to actually have at least a few more years where he's making NHL bank, that's not going to happen if he thinks he's going to call his shots.
True. By the way, a guy who just ran out of real estate, Ryan Getzlaff, on a penalty shot, missed the entire net. I have to say.
Getzlaff, awesome player. I've seen him on breakaways before. He's done. He can over. I love Getzlaff, but he can overthink plays sometimes.
Yeah, and he's having a hell of a playoff too.
He makes Michael Grabner look like a magician.
Well, I will tell you, on my one and only opportunity in a shootout situation, I was shooting on one Anthony Perez, AJ Perez from USA Today. And I did get a shot on net, and he did stop me. But I was worried about the same thing, totally missing the
net. I mean, AJ's a beer league legend. Come on.
He is. I tried to go five hole. I was happy I just got a shot off without falling down and without anything else.
So AJ is still happy to be alive after taking shots from Alex Ovechkin for that PC dead. He's happy to be alive.
He is happy to be alive.
You're nothing in comparison.
No, I'm not a flea. I'm a flea in comparison. The Dantonov thing will be interesting because if Vegas does sign him, then they will have a one line team so far, and so we'll see if that happens in the next couple of days. That's a good one, and they're taking shape. The other interesting thing is, and information is starting to bleed out about it. It looks like there is no order as to where McPhee will take players from whatever team. So the interesting thing is, I think if you're going to make this a TV event, you should have somebody at the adding machine, and basically every time McPhee takes a player, their salary is going to have to go up there, and you add it up, and you keep, because they're going to want to know how much they're spending. They're going to have that like concurrent listing. Like if you take Marc-Andre Fleury, $5.7 million, whoever it is, they're going to have a running total next to it. And so, but the interesting part is those last couple of teams are going to be just squirming. And he might have to just try and fit in players based, I don't think he's going to get near the cap, but, he might get close. And so it'll be interesting. I mean, there'll be teams sweating at the end because you probably want to be one of the first couple of teams and just get it out of the way. But, teams could be waiting there a long time until he selects their guy.
Yeah, I imagined it being in alphabetical order. I was, looking forward to Anaheim being
I don't
the
think
first
it
one
is.
Because, yeah, I mean, that's sort of disappointing because Anaheim is, the most interesting one. To lead off with that one, are they going to buy out Bieksa? Are they going to expose Silverberg? Are they going to trade Josh Manson before you get to June 21st? I mean, there's so many questions with just that team, and we can go through the 29 other ones.
Well, think about it, though. If I don't know this for sure. I've just been talking to people, and nobody has heard. But it does seem like he's just going to – it could go a la carte. If it went the way you're saying it, then if they started with Anaheim, by the time they got to the Sabres, he may not want to get Evander Kane because he might not have room for the 5.5 and to do other things.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think it'll go that way.
In the list of possible disasters, Evander Kane in Vegas it's like the 1906 earthquake in San Francisco. They cannot allow that to happen. The only bigger disaster would be Jaromir Jagr going to Vegas. His salary, whatever it is, will be just sign it over to the Bellagio.
Yeah. it'll be very interesting though to see how many draft picks McPhee acquires, because I think for the guys that he makes a definite deal for. He has to make them for this year. I don't think you could put them for the year after. I think it has to sort of be settled. Yeah. I don't know that for sure either, but I got that feeling like if you're trading for something, you got to, because I don't think, you know, you can have things hanging out there, but maybe they can. I don't know. So we'll see how many draft picks he can acquire. We'll see. But right now, at this moment, he's the most important GM in the league.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ed.
No, you first, Matt. We got Matt Ken.
There is going to be a lot of, for lack of a better phrase, protection money being paid
yes.
to George McPhee. In the,
go figure. Vegas and protection money. Go figure.
Yeah, because you know, he not only has to put together a 23-man roster for the NHL, but he has to put together a 25-man roster for the AHL too, and have young players who can come up and maybe be players in a year or two. That's why, like in a situation like say for example Toronto, you know, he may take Eric Fehr as the guy in the expansion draft, but for Lou Lamoriello to protect some of the other prospects that he doesn't want to expose to Vegas, he may trade a Josh Lebo or Brent Leipzig. So, you know, those guys can play either in the AHL or be borderline NHLers, and you can fill your roster and you get two for the price of one. He's going to have to do that a bunch of times because otherwise, you know, what is he going to do, sign 30 free agents? It doesn't work that way. They're going to have to get more than one player.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're now looking at a situation in the in the Anaheim game where Klefbom just took a puck to the face, and he wasn't having a great series anyhow. I mean, this could be a big deal for Anaheim. Like, they could just win this as a war of attrition.
They could.
And
that's the thing about Edmonton. Defensive depth, I think, is a concern for Edmonton. They start losing guys in this series like that, especially on defense. That becomes – I know Benning went down earlier. I think he got back in, but again, Edmonton's got to be careful in this case in terms of their defensive depth, and that they start tapping into that, Anaheim's just going to start establishing beachheads in their end, so they have to be pretty careful with that.
Yeah, no doubt, and we'll see how that goes. The, you know, so we got in the draft, lottery. There was one other subject. What was the other subject?
The Buffalo GM.
Yeah, how's that going, Mike?
well, they were talking about transponders and tail numbers yesterday because they thought that a Pegula private plane being sent from Pittsburgh to Buffalo meant that Jason Botterill was going to get the job, and then nothing happened. So I mean, the only thing we've heard in the last 24 hours is that apparently Mike Fuda is not going to be the guy in Buffalo, which is a little surprising because he was interviewed before when Murray got the job, and you know the Pegulas seem to be like very comfortable with like the people that they have knowledge of or the people that they know. So I thought he might have.
I think that came down to actual deal. Like my guess is, and I don't know, I don't have any inside info. I know Mike a little bit, but I think it probably came down to exact the way the contract would break down, like years and money, and because he gets paid very well with the Kings, they would definitely have to outmark the Kings for that. And then he probably, you know, maybe even waited out and maybe even thought about it and said, you know, I got a good thing here. And because I did see where people were writing that, like, hey, he's got it really good in LA. So I kind of wonder if it was a mutual thing after a while. So it, you know, he's out. So it doesn't matter. It could be Botterill. Mm-hmm. Like I said, for all we know that, you know, Dave Parker was on that plane. Like, we don't know. We don't know who was on that plane, but clearly it didn't matter because nobody's been hired yet. So we'll see about that. Now, you guys did want to talk about Stanley Cup commercials. And maybe Anthony can get to the bottom of this one because I think it was Mark Rosenman that told me that on the NHL Network is where the Shiny Heine commercial came into play. Have you seen that one, Ant?
That one I've actually not seen yet. Thankfully.
Okay.
Just the description of those two words means.
I think Russ is
thankful
making that one up because I think Russ is making that one up because I've seen the stupid Beezed commercial on the NHL Network, and, you know, the girl has gone from, like, before and after.
I thought Beezed owns the NHL Network at by the amount of ad time that they've purchased from them. I mean, come on.
No, I'll double check this with Mark Roseman, but he is the one that mentioned the shiny hiney, made me look up the commercial, and it's everything that you think it is and worse. And so if you look it up, that's on you.
It's either Beezed or the Addiction Network that own the NHL Network, because
ooh,
those commercials are on there as well.
Yeah.
But Anthony, the one I have a problem with is like I mentioned on the Buzzcast a couple days ago, the NBCSN, you know, they'll run the Geico commercial. You know, there was the random red couch from McDonald's. There was the treadmill Geico. Now it's the guy who's talking to his dog, and the other guy thinks he's talking to him. I mean, the one that drives me insane right now is the Kia commercial, where the girl from Mad Men, Christina Hendricks, walks by the limos, and she gets into this Kia that looks like it's going to fall apart about 5 seconds after she turns the ignition. It's a Kia. It's not a Cadillac. It's not a Mercedes. It's a friggin' Kia.
It's true. I have a feeling that the Martin Brodeur Enterprise
one. Oh, God. That thing is just But besides
disturbing,
the whole computer-generated head, is head like staying in the same position while the body moves in like 10,000
yes,
different directions.
Yeah,
you know. And then the midlife crisis line, I'm like, Marty, you had a midlife crisis in the middle of your 30s, dude. And
yeah,
like, you know.
So yeah,
we need to go there.
We're not
going to
go there.
Midlife crisis. I'm like, Marty, that's you're digging. You don't need to dig up bad memories here, dude.
No, but I just think that commercial is going to end up working into our psyche, and in a month or two, we'll be sick of that one too. I mean, there's a really good chance.
Yeah, let's just say the Brodeurs are not going to end up on the Family Feud.
True. On the plus side, I think the Keith Jones one, Milbury one's cute, so I could live with that for a little while.
That one's a good one.
Well, but there's got to be a couple other bad ones on the way, and I'm sure they're gonna be there, and I'm sure we'll be talking about them, and we'll see what happens with Rangers Ottawa. I'm calling Chris Neal. I think they're gonna play Chris Neal. We'll see, and that's pretty much it.
All right.
And pretty much a full show, and now I have to end this call, and all of a sudden the screen didn't. Ah, there it is. It's on a new service, folks, so, you know, you got to give me a minute. All right, that's it for Off the Post. Catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.